Besides these glaring examples of the consequences of a wicked life, there were many of your well-wishers who advised you well, told you not to be vicious and to look well around yourself, but you had no faith in them. You falsified and ignored them. If you look and ponder over the ruins of houses, places, and deserted cities, you would find them good advisers, warning you to realize and to comprehend the consequences of a wicked life, and you would see that those ruins were your sympathetic tutors and wanted you not to ruin your own life and opportunities. This world is a good place to stay in for the man who does not consider it to be a place of permanent resort. Through this world, only those people who refrain from temptations to sin will attain salvation and his blessings. When the day of judgment will arrive, and when the quakes will destroy this earth, then every religion and creed will have its adherents gathered together. Every priest and teacher will have his disciples around him, and every leader will find his followers assembled behind him. Then perfect justice will rule. Every big and small action, every good or bad deed, every word said, every act done, and every thought propagated will be dealt with absolute equity and fairness. On that day, excuses and appeals will have no meaning and no value, and will be turned down. Therefore, adopt today in your life things which will plead your case on the day of judgment. Take with you from this mortal world things which will be helpful to you on that day, and which may prove immortal and everlasting. Try to achieve salvation and exert yourself to your utmost for it. Sermon 228. In this sermon, Imam Ali says that he would willingly suffer any pain rather than harm or injure any man or commit a sin against Allah or the religion. Then he cites two examples showing how on two occasions he was persuaded to go against the orders of Allah and how he spurned the temptations. I bear Allah as my witness that I prefer to pass sleepless nights over the sharp thorns of prickly plants, or to suffer from the worst form of injury and insult, than to meet my Lord and the Holy Prophet, peace of Allah be upon him and his descendants, on the day of judgment, as a tyrant who has persecuted any person, or as a usurper who has wrongfully seized the property of somebody else. Why should I tyrannize or exploit somebody to provide comfort and ease for my body, which will shortly be destroyed and decayed, and which will lie in the grave for a long period? I swear by Allah that I saw my own brother, Aqil, suffering from extreme poverty and need. He requested me to spare him 3.5 says of wheat out of the public granary. Starvation had turned his children into moving skeletons and had changed their color to blue. Aqil was persistent in his desire to acquire out of his turn something from the public treasure. He tried to coax me and to appeal to my brotherly love. I wanted to help him out of my personal property, but his desire to get something from the public property was hateful to me. It was against all the canons of honesty and integrity, and against the teachings of Islam. When he felt that that I was hearing him attentively. He thought that I would forego my principles and my religion for his sake and for his children's sake. I wanted him to realize that by ascending to his wish, I was placing myself as a sinner before my Allah, which I would never do. I then heated a disc of iron, and when it was very hot, I took it near his body, pretending to burn it. He shouted with terror and wanted to know what I meant by doing that. I replied, "O my brother, you cry out in fear that the fire set by a man as a practical demonstration will burn you, and you wanted me to accept with ease and pleasure the fire of hell roused by Allah. A more surprising thing happened to me the other day. A person, history says that he was Ashaf bin Qais, brought to me one night a very well cooked and delicious sweet in a basin. It was cooked in honey and it was very fragrant. I hated and abhorred the sweet as if it was cooked in the saliva of a serpent or in its poison. I asked him, "Is it zakat, religious tax, or a reward or charity or remuneration for any work which I have done for you? Because you know that all these things are illegal and unlawful for us, Ahlul Bayt, progeny of the Holy Prophet. And we are forbidden by Allah to accept them." He replied that it was not. It was merely a gift, as he never had presented Imam Ali anything when Imam Ali was not in power, and as they were not on such friendly terms as of mutually offering and accepting presents, it was clear that this offering had some unholy ulterior motive, and Imam Ali knew this and replied, "May you not live long. Do you want to seduce me? Have you gone mad? What nonsense is it that you are talking? By Allah, if all the seven continents with all that they contain are offered to me as a remuneration or bribe for depriving an ant of the husk of a grain of barley carried by it, I will never do it. This world to me is even more worthless than the small bit of a leaf chewed by a locust. Ali has no interest with mortal luxuries, wealth, ease, and comforts of this world. I seek his protection and help from negligence of my duty and from being wicked and vicious." Sermon 229. The following is one of the supplications often repeated by Imam Ali. Through this supplication, he teaches us that not only wealth but contentment is also necessary to keep up one's dignity. That abject poverty forces one to begging and falsely praising his benefactors, slandering those who refuse to help him, making one forget that actually Allah and not man grants or deprives him, and that he only should be approached. O Lord, protect my prestige and dignity by making me free from wants, by teaching me contentment and satisfaction with what you have granted me. And please Allah, do not let abject poverty and destitution lower my status and position in the eyes of society. Do not force me to go begging from those who beg of you for their deeds and requirements, and to invoke favors of those who are wicked and vicious, lest I should lose nobility of my character and start praising those who give me something, and slandering and backbiting those who refuse to come to my help, lest I should forget you altogether and overlook the fact that you and you alone can bestow something and everything if you like, and prevent everything from reaching anybody if you so desire. Verily, you have power and might to do as you desire. Sermon 2:30. What is this world and what is life? How has the world treated others, and how is it going to treat you? What should you expect of it, and what have you to learn from it? This is the theme of this sermon. This house, world, is surrounded by trials, distresses, and ill fortunes. It is notorious for its faithlessness. It is whimsical and subject to constant changes. Whoever stays here cannot expect security and cannot remain immune from calamities and reverses. No condition here is permanent. Pleasure here lead to wickedness and vices. Peace and safety is not to be found here. Here one has always to face adversities, disappointments, and failures, and in the end, death finishes him. O creatures of Allah, remember that this world is not going to treat you better than it has treated others. And you will have to pass through almost all of the experiences through which others have passed before you. Many of them had longer spans of life, had richer and happier surroundings, and possessed more distinctive personalities and reputation than you. Where are they now? They have been silenced. Their power and prestige have gone. Their bodies have decayed. Their houses lie deserted, and even their traces have disappeared. They were forced to change their spacious and luxurious places and strong fortresses into graves made of earth and slabs of stones. Graves which were deep, dark, narrow, and hard, and which have cheerless, chilling, dismal, and dreary surroundings. It may also happen that their graves may just be near their habitations, but they, in those graves, are like travelers far away from their homes. They are traveling through a place which confuses and overawes them. It is a place which has brought their worldly activities to an abrupt end and made them busy with thought of the Day of Judgment. They now have no love of their homeland and no friendly contacts, even with their lifelong neighbors and friends. How could they meet each other when decay and rot has taken hold of their bodies and brains, and when the earth has eaten them up? Imagine yourself to be there where they are now. Imagine that the earth has taken hold of you and that a grave has embraced you. Can you imagine what your condition will be when you reach the end of the journey, when you are resurrected, when everybody will realize the worth of his deeds and words, when everyone will be brought before the Almighty Allah, and when self-deception and deception of others will be of no avail? Sermon 2:31. This is one of the supplications of Imam Ali. It teaches what to ask of Allah and how. It also explains the attributes of people who may be considered friends of Allah. O Lord, you love your friends more than they have ever been loved by anybody. You are the best and the most speedy helper of those who rely upon nobody else but you. You know their secrets. Everything which is hidden in their minds is an open secret to you. You are fully aware of the depth of their knowledge and flight of their imaginations. Your friend's highest ambition is to be in your vicinity and to win your favor. If remoteness from your realm and if your favors disturb and worries them, they get solace out of your glorification and remembrance. If calamities and misfortunes befall them, they seek your protection. They know that you are the master of everything and nothing can happen but with your permission. If I am confused and perplexed in asking of you the best of your blessings, then Lord, lead me and guide me to beg of you of only such things as will be eternally beneficial to me, and looking to your mercy and grace in granting blessings, I feel that such guidance will be neither too big for you nor a novelty. O Lord, please decide my case on the basis of clemency and forgiveness and not on the principles of justice and true reward. Sermon 2:32. This discourse is in praise of somebody whose name is not mentioned, but his good deeds are praised by Imam Ali. This way of praising somebody without mentioning his name, but extolling his merits, appears to be a common practice of Imam Ali. In this very book, there are several other discourses where he has, in some places, spoken of one person, while at the other places, of many persons, praising their ways of living and thinking. He has seldom spoken highly of any person mentioning his name except the Holy Prophet. Ibn Abil Habib, the most famous and the greatest commentator of Nahjul Balagha, says that by this discourse Imam Ali meant Caliph Umar, but Allama Ibn Nasir, on the contrary, commenting upon this sermon, under the caption Alam Nahjul Balagha, says Imam Ali in this discourse has praised one of the companions of the Holy Prophet who died before Imam Ali. Same is the opinion of Allama Qutbuddin Rawandi, nearly a century before Ibn Abil Habib. Another famous commentator of this book, Ibn Maytham, agrees with Qutbuddin Rawandi and says, Imam Ali has thus praised one of the companions of the Holy Prophet who had died before evil days dawned upon Islam. Efforts of some commentators to find from the very words of the discourse a meaning which will fit none but a ruler of a state is also fruitless effort, because they stress upon the words Khairuba, good of this world, and Sharuba, the evil of this world. Now every man, even a pauper in the most limited sphere of his activities, has occasions to do some good and to commit some sin, evil. Therefore, it is not right to say that only a ruler has opportunities to do good or bad. Imam Ali himself, in one of his sermons, advises everybody to keep the pillars of religion, oneness of Allah and the prophethood of our Holy Prophet, raised, and to keep these two lamps burning. Naturally, every Muslim was not, is not, and will never be a ruler. Therefore, Imam Ali advises every one of us to do this duty within the scope of his activities. May Allah reward that person who made the path straight, purified the polluted minds, left schism and innovation, led a pious life, and died in fragrance of sanctity. He did good deeds and abstained from evil. He obeyed Allah and feared Him. He died before people started seriously dissenting among themselves. He left them in such an atmosphere and surroundings that they were confused and misguided and could not find the true path, and those who were following the right way did not know whether they were right or wrong. 7233. This sermon is about the oath of allegiance to his caliphate. A similar sermon, but in different words, occurs in this book at another place. You were dragging my hand towards you to swear the oath of allegiance, you till you gathered round me in such numbers and in such a way, as if you were thirsty camels and I was the only spring of water. In your eagerness, you almost crushed me. You were pushing and dragging each other to reach me, till laces of my shoes were broken. The robe, Aba, fell down from my shoulder, and in a stampede old and weak persons were crushed. You were so overjoyed on the occasion that even young children came out toddling, running, and joyfully jumping. Old people, on dragging themselves to reach my feet, the ill and sick came to me staggering and creeping, and even young girls came out of their houses running towards me to show their veneration and respect. Can you deny these facts? Sermon 234. This sermon explains piety, the value of adopting piety when there is still time to be pious, and when the evil prevails in the world. It comments on the opportunities given by life and taken away by death. It further describes the attributes of the devotees of Allah and virtuous people. In this sermon, Imam Ali also speaks of death and its effects in a graphic style. Verily, piety is a key to the door of righteousness and virtue. It is a provision for the next world. It is a source of freedom from slavery of evil desires and a wall of protection from every ill luck and misfortune. It is a refuge for those who try to run away from vice and wickedness. Through it, a person can achieve his aims of life. Be virtuous when there is still time for you to realize and adopt virtues. When repentance can do you good, when prayers are heard, when you are enjoying peace and comfort, and when the angels are still recording your good and bad deeds, when you still have power and opportunities to do good or to be wicked. Do good before old age or disability stops you from doing anything, before protracted illness may send you down exhausted and unfit for any work, and before death takes you away from this sphere of activities, because death, sooner or later, will put an end to all your pleasures and enjoyments. It will frustrate all your aims and desires, and it will send you far away from your cherished surroundings. Remember that death comes like an unwelcomed guest. It is the only antagonist whom you cannot defeat or overcome. It is a murderer who cannot be avenged upon. Its snares are always around you. Its destructive forces are surrounding you. It has every one of you under its complete control, perfect sway and absolute power. It keeps you under its subjugation. It can never miss its mark. Soon its gloom may darken your life. Its flame in the form of a disease may consume your vitality and energy. Its terrible pain and anguish may torture you. It will turn your normal breathing to agonized gasps. It will subject you to faintings and trance, and you will come out of them with very bad taste in your mouth. As none of you actually and sincerely accepts death, even its normal approach will seem to you as if it has attacked you suddenly. It will silence those who tell you their secrets quietly, your nearest relatives and friends. It will disperse your groups, unions, and associations. It will destroy your individuals. It will depopulate your habitations. It will prepare your heirs to divide your property between your near relatives, many of whom have never done any good to you. Some of them may have felt sorry at your death, but many others may have been glad that you were dead and gone. Therefore, it is advisable for you to be ready for death, to try your best to provide yourself for the next world. Be careful that this world may not deceive you as it has deceived people who have gone before you. They may have been men of power and wealth, may have taken full advantage of this world, and may have acquired rank and position. But their days were numbered, and those numbers came to an end. All their power and glory was taken away from them. Their graves were made their lodgings. Their wealth, properties, and even their kingdoms became heirloom for their heirs to enjoy. They do not recognize those who visit their graves. They do not care who weeps for them and who does not. And they do not reply to those who call them. Beware of this world. It is dishonest and deceitful. It is unfaithful and mercenary. Whatever it gives is taken back quickly. Whomsoever it honors with power, wealth, and fame is disrobed sooner or later. Its pleasures are not lasting. Its troubles are unending. Its sorrows are constant.